Welcome to the Gospel Rain Podcast, part of the teaching ministry of Dr. Matt Brown and Dr. Micah Carter. We hope you will find gospel-centered answers to your questions about theology and the Christian life. And now, we welcome you to the Gospel Rain Conversation.
Welcome back to the Gospel Rain Podcast. I'm so thankful that you're with us today as our listeners. We're going to get into a topic today that generally is a little bit different for us. We spend a lot of time talking about theology and matters of the church and those kind of things, mainly for those who are church members, those who are disciples, who are growing in their faith. We don't spend a lot of time addressing just pastors. And so today is not just for pastors, but today may come more from a pastor's heart, the heart of a shepherd. And a lot of times when we do a podcast, we'll let you in on a secret. A lot of times we're prepared for the podcast. We've done some research. We've taken some notes. We've prepared. And today is a little bit more off the cuff. It's a little bit more of an organic conversation about something that really is near and dear to our heart as pastors. Mm-hmm. And Mike, I want to get into a little bit of discussion with you and see what you think. And I think we can sort of bounce around on this topic. But I think this would be really good, not just for ministers, but for our church members too, to hear the heart of their shepherd, hear the heart of their pastor. So let's talk about this. One of the things that we do often as pastors is we invite other preachers and pastors to come and preach in our pulpit. We have, maybe for a revival service, it may be for a Bible conference, it may be for, you know, just a worship service. One worship service out of the month, we have an opportunity to have a guest speaker and that kind of thing. Oftentimes, we are invited to other churches to speak and to preach, maybe at a revival or something like that. One of the things that comes up often in our conversation as pastors is how to treat that event or that opportunity responsibly, and how we as shepherds, when we have a visiting preacher coming to our church, how we can help our church body to be able to process what is going to be preached, and then how to deal with it maybe at an invitation time and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that can cause some issues for us, and we need to be responsible to think through this as pastors. So as we jump into the conversation, Mike, I just want to ask you, as we maybe talk to some younger pastors who may not be as experienced in this area about having a visiting pastor or being that visiting pastor, what's one of the things that you would encourage that young pastor to consider when he walks into another church to preach?
Yeah, this is a great subject, I think, for us to wade into today. And you know, you and I just spent some time at the Mississippi Baptist Pastors Conference, and we were reminded of the shepherding role of a pastor. Really from 1 Peter chapter 5, where Peter says to shepherd God's flock among you, not overseeing out of compulsion, but willingly as God would have you. And he says, because this flock has been entrusted to you. Mm. Okay, and so our dominant theme in Scripture for our work is shepherding. And we're looking over both to feed God's people, but also to protect God's people. And, you know, as part of that, what we want to do is when we have people come in and share the word with our people or challenge or exhort our people, we want to make sure that that both the visiting preacher and our people are in the best position possible to receive the word. Hmm. And, you know, obviously you're never going to agree 100% with anybody, probably doctrinally. You and I align pretty well on most things. Mm-hmm. And I've had you preach for me. Right. I'm comfortable with you preaching for me and serving my people. But sometimes you'll invite somebody in your context that maybe you don't know personally or you haven't had a chance to renew their ministry. So maybe some best helps on thinking through that. Mm. I don't know about you. I'd like your take on this, but sometimes I have given a theme to a visiting preacher,
right,
and say, would you preach in this theme? Or I'm preaching this series. Would you jump right in my series and pick up where I left off?
Right.
Or I've even given a text to them and say, look, you can do with it what you want to do with it, but this is the text that we need to. Mm. And then there are sometimes, Matt, where I said, look, you give us what God gives you. I don't have any direction. I don't have any. You just come and you listen to the Spirit. You give us what we need. And so, you know, I think any one of those options is certainly acceptable for a visiting preacher you know, to really jump in and do any one of those things. What about you? You ever thought through that?
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that both ways. This matter of fact, we had a revival. We had revival services just a couple of months ago, and I had the pastor who came was a pastor. He was not an evangelist necessarily by trade or by career, but he was a pastor up in Missouri. Had him come and preach, and I did. I sent him a letter about 3 weeks before he came and just said, hey, I know you're preparing, and I'd already booked with him about a year beforehand, but I sent him a letter and just said, I know you're preparing, but this is a theme that we've sort of adopted, just me and Marty, my worship pastor, and said, here's one of the things that we want to sort of look at, and I want you to give the implications of, and our thing was once dead, now alive, and that was sort of our theme. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to give the implications to the body, what it means to have been once dead, now alive, and mainly coming from the book of Ephesians, because we were preaching in Ephesians at the time, still are, but Ephesians chapter 2, that's what Paul says, you were once dead, now you're alive. Mm-hmm. And so as we had been preaching through that, I had been preaching through that, I wanted him to sort of then take whatever scripture he wanted to come and just sort of say, how does that lived out? What are the implications of that in the Christian life? So I have done that. I've done that thematically before, but then have been other times too where I've had somebody come and just say, look, I'm open to whatever you want to preach. Now, I will say from my perspective,
right,
as a pastor going to preach at somebody else's book, I like having some direction.
I do too.
It helps me. I don't know that not everybody wants that. Everybody wants, a lot of people may just want to be able to, hey, just let me go. Just let me do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but I like having a little bit of direction. It gives me something to shoot for. It gives me a target. Yeah. It gives me it narrows down my focus and my study.
That's right.
And I like that better. Do you like that better? Or
I share the same. I share the same reaction to that. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be in California this next weekend. At a church plant that we partner with, and he's asked me to preach. And I said, well, what would you, do you have a theme? He said, well, we're in a series called Rhythms, and he sent me a message just the other day. This is what our small group is going to be studying. Wow. I want you to talk about the rhythm of listening. Wow. And so, you know, and then he had like maybe 4 or 5 scriptures that they're going to be wrestling with. He said, feel free to preach any one of these texts, or if you want to come in with something complimentary
interesting
to that. So, man, that narrowed it down significantly for me. So I really like that. Also, with the invitation, we'll talk about this more specifically later, but I already know that, you know, I'm going to hand it off to him when I'm finished preaching, invite, you know, Pastor Ruben to come up, and he'll walk them through the next steps of what we'll talk about more of that to come. But so I think it's okay, because we got to get over, I think, in some sense, especially for a visiting preacher, we're asking someone to come preach for us. We got to get over the concern that they might be offended by telling them what to preach. I'm not telling them what to preach.
Right.
But I do have, as an overseer of this little flock that the Lord's given me, that I know where we are, and I know kind of where we're going. And so to me, not just the fact that this will narrow it down for them, but in other words, it's not unspiritual or lacking prayerfulness
right.
to tell someone to come in, here's what I'd like you to focus on. I actually think that's good oversight for where your people are.
I like that too, and I agree with you. I think that's part of what Peter may be talking about there, shepherding. I think it has to do with where you know your people are, what you've been preaching on for the last 3 years or 5 years, or sort of the, you know, my folks know me by now. They know sort of my rhythm of preaching. They know my idiosyncrasies in preaching, that kind of stuff. But they also know, at least in some part, they know how I've invested in them, in the Word, and what we've been talking about, and what I've been challenging them with, and all that. And I think that's maybe part of the responsibility of a pastor to another preacher to say, look, I'm just going to give you some help. I'm going to guide you and just say, this is what my people are learning right now. This is what we're dealing with, and this would be helpful. Now, there have been other times, too, that I've not given them a theme, but I've maybe talked to a pastor and said, okay, this is what we're dealing with in our church family right now. You know, we got a lot of issues like this or that, and you know, I got people that are, you know, whatever. And so sort of give them a clue as to where some of my people may be, and say, you know, I don't know if you want to do anything with that, but that's where we are right now.
Yeah.
And where a lot of our folks are. And so, you know, that may be helpful for a pastor. I've found that helpful in the past.
Me too.
And so I don't know that that every pastor needs that.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I mean, I've got, you know, 1,500 sermons that I've preached I can draw from and I could find another sermon that I've preached and preach it anywhere. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah, let's talk about that too, because and sometimes if someone's coming in and I don't have an idea, then say, I'm going to trust the Lord with that. Lord, you're going to give us what we need to hear. And if I'm the visiting preacher and there's no direction, then this is what's interesting for people that are not in ministry. You may not. There's different ways to approach this, but because you and I've been preaching for so long, we have a lot of different sermon series and sermon texts that, for example, there's a church in my city that I visited Sunday, and I thought, if I'm asked to preach, what am I going to preach? And I had just preached through 1 Corinthians, and I thought, Christ and Him crucified, chapter 2, verse 2. And so I went back to the folder, pulled out that, scanned through that sermon, said, yeah, I'd become, if I'm asked to preach, this is what I'll probably give. And other times you'll think through some things, maybe it's fresh in your mind, ministry, like, I don't know, Lord, you've got to give me something new. You got to give me something new for the people, and that's good. So yeah, that's really helpful, man. And as a matter of fact, when I came to Gaston for you in a revival a year ago, 2 years ago, something like that, you and I talked a little bit about this, and I think I share with you, well, here's what I'm thinking about preaching, the doctrine of God, and I'm going to break it down this way, this way, this way. And I think that's what we ended up doing. But if you would have come back to me and said, man, I don't know, I've kind of already been in those waters in the last couple, 3 months, 6 months, would you consider maybe doing something else? I would have received that. Not just as your friend, but as a visiting preacher, say, okay, let me go back to the drawing board.
Right, he knows his people more than I do.
That's right. Yeah. And I don't want to, if you've already covered it, I don't want to come back in and do that just right on the heels, because that, you know, unless you said, yeah, I think that needs some reinforcement, go ahead and jump into it, then we could do that. But had you told me, I don't know, man, maybe would you think about going a different direction? I personally, I'm just saying, guys are wired differently. I understand that.
Sure.
But I personally would have received that and said, absolutely, man, whatever works best for your people.
Yeah, and I like that. And we're not knocking. I know your heart in this. I'm not knocking evangelists who would come in and just preach something that, you know, you weren't aware of, or you didn't have an opportunity to, or you know, they're not up for that kind of thing. They're there to preach messages that God has led. I'm not knocking that at all. We do know that the Holy Spirit of God, it blows like a wind, and sometimes God's going to use something that we didn't think of, or something that we didn't plan on, so I know that God will use those things. But as a pastor with a shepherd's heart, you sort of feel a sense of a heavy responsibility for your people,
right?
To say, here's what I think they need. Here's what I've been praying for them about, and here's what I want them to understand, or here's what I want them to be able to get through this series of sermons that somebody else is going to preach, or something like that. Usually now, if it's somebody coming to preach one sermon, like on a Sunday morning, generally I won't give them a specific direction.
Right.
But if I know he's going to be with my people for a period of time, I might want to tailor that a little bit. Is that fair?
I think that's
fair?
Great. Yeah.
Do you see what I'm talking about?
Same way.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, let me throw this out to you and let you run with it. What, how do I frame this question up? In terms of when you invite someone to preach for you, do you have any prior conversations about theological or even political hot button issues? And I'm not talking about Calvinism and all. I'm talking about, do you give any sense of, hey, you know, let's not wade into these waters? I mean, I don't think I've ever done that for anybody, but I wouldn't want somebody to come in here and create a firestorm theologically that I'm going to have to deal with for the weeks and months to follow, and they don't even know what has happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't have a specific, you know, thought in mind, but I'm curious about how do we process this? You know, especially for brothers that we may not know where they stand on certain issues, and they come in and they're in a text and they just kind of go for it.
Yeah, that's a great question as a pastor. That's something that I think every pastor has to deal with somehow responsibly. I've done both, I guess. I have sat down with some people and maybe discuss certain things. Let's put it this way. If you're going to invite a pastor or an evangelist to come preach during an election time, I might want to be really clear with that pastor and say, look, I don't want us to wade in these waters politically right now. I've dealt with some things with my folks. I've said some things that I think I need to say as their pastor. But I just don't want to get into politics, and I know it's a real thing right now with an election or whatever. So I would say if I had somebody coming to preach, say, last Sunday or this Sunday, I might say to them, if you don't mind, let's just avoid political kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, and not to offend that guy, not to assume that he would do that, but I just want to make sure that I don't want to start something that way that really is not necessary.
That's right.
My people need to hear the word. They need to be growing spiritually. And if politics, he may say something that's actually I agree with, that's politically. Mm-hmm. But politically speaking, I don't know that I need that right now in my church family. Let me process through some of that if I need to with my folks in a responsible way of discipling. Let's not just throw something out there as bait and then let people just sort of go at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to create that kind of environment.
Yeah.
So, but there have been other times too. And I'll tell you what I do, and this is just my personal thing. Most everybody that I get to come and preach for me, I already know that I can trust them. Mm-hmm. For instance, the past revival that we had just a couple of months ago, when I knew that he was going to be coming, somebody had asked me, hey, you need to check him out. You need to get him to come be a great, okay, great. I will do now, because we have the privilege of doing this, I can go on the internet now and listen to some of his sermons.
That's true. Yep.
And I can listen to his style. I can listen to how he frames certain things. I can listen to what his passions are in his sermons. Mm-hmm. And I can hear his heart. And so I got a chance to do that with the last guy. I listened to a number of sermons by him. Not a whole bunch, but I listened mm-hmm. to a few. Just enough to be able to hear, okay, I like this. I think he's communicating the word.
Yeah.
I think that's his passion, is to get the word. I don't think he wasn't picking up hot button issues on his own sermons with his own people. Seemed that he was preaching the text. Mm-hmm. And so I think, okay, I can trust that. And I didn't know the guy. I had never met him before. But I felt like I could already trust him before he got here. And I usually get people who come and preach for me that I either know them mm-hmm. or I have found out through other people or through social media or through videos or whatever that I feel like I can trust them.
Yeah.
And that's generally my practice, because I'm probably, to be honest with you, I'm probably anal about that. Mm-hmm. I don't trust somebody coming into my pulpit that I don't really know and that I've never heard before, and I don't trust. That's hard for me to do that. And
well, I think that comes from the right place.
Because I hope so.
Because if we are overseers, as the Bible defines us, and honestly, man, if you and I are going to stand before King Jesus someday and be accountable for how we have watched over the souls of our people,
yeah, that's true.
It's not that you and I have the corner market on truth or all understanding, or
right?
But we're shepherding week in and week out,
right?
In the text, in the homes of our people, in the lives of our people, I think it's wise. You know, we've got to be able to take advantage of the tools that are for us. And if you got somebody who you don't really know, do some research. I think that's a good idea.
What about you? What about you? What do you bring people in to preach that you may or
mostly,
may not know?
Mostly that I know. Yeah. Sometimes they come on a recommendation, as you mentioned.
From somebody, from a friend that you trust.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar, have a chance to look, you know, is there anything out there where I've heard them preach or something like that? And, you know, sometimes that can be a mixed bag, you know, and honestly, you know, when I was thinking about theology too, is that you might even have somebody you love and you trust come in and say something in the context of a sermon that you couldn't foresee would create an issue with your
right.
people, and you're gonna do that. You know, I could think, you know, unwittingly someone could come in, for example, and minimize baptism
mm-hmm.
or question baptism in some sense, mm-hmm. like. I know, for example, like John Piper has softened on, for example, admission to church membership for people that have been
right.
sprinkled.
Right.
And he says, I don't want to make church membership narrower than entry to heaven. Well, I think that's a little irresponsible mm-hmm. for Pastor Piper to say that. And I think it would create, if that was said in my pulpit, for example, I think that would create confusion among my people, and it would create a conversation. Now, there could be a benefit to that.
Well,
in
that's
terms
true.
Of teaching.
That's true.
But in the
but you want it to be you want it to be in the sort of a context that's a little bit more guarded,
right?
You know,
right.
something that you can control a little bit more,
right? So you know, some things you can help, some things you can't help, but in terms of the invitation and inviting people to come and preach for you, And I think most guys are probably in this, unless you're just in a pinch and you can't do anything about it. You're going to have people that you know, you trust, or you've had a chance to examine in some way, mm-hmm. through interpersonal relationships or through the internet, you know, because that can be very helpful. So,
yeah. Well, when we talk about that too, I want to make sure that I've got a guy who's actually going to hold the Bible and preach from it.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, want a guy who's going to come up there, read a script, read a passage, or read a verse, and then go off on something for the next 35 minutes that doesn't have anything to do with the text. I want somebody to preach the text because that's what I want. I want to hear that. Yeah. I want to be able to listen. Like this past Sunday night, I had our interim children's minister preach. Just because I wanted him to. I wanted him to get some experience, and I like to be fed. So I wanted to sit and listen to a sermon. So I sat. I got a chance to sit with my family. Matter of fact, we packed a pew Sunday night, just me and my wife and my kids. We packed the whole pew. And I don't ever get a chance to do that with my family, to sit in church with. But Nolan did a great job. He just opened the scripture, and he preached through about four verses in Colossians chapter 1 and just went from verse to verse. And just,
he took a tough text, too.
He did,
he called
man.
Me about that. He did. He's like, what's your take on this?
He did. And he said he studied for that more than he ever has.
Yeah,
but he did a good job, and he walked right through the text. That's what I want, because I want to feed that way.
Right.
I really want to. I want to feed on the scripture the same way that I want. So I realize that my folks are getting the same kind of preaching that I like.
Yeah.
That's what I want. That's what how I like to be fed, and that's sort of how I end up feeding my people.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want somebody who will do that. I don't want somebody who just read a verse and then go off on something, and just preach from whatever comes into his mind for the next 35 minutes that doesn't have anything to do with what he just read.
That's
you know. And now my folks know enough preaching just from me having been there so long. They can recognize that. They can see.
And they will recognize that. And when you're committed to what you and I would call, we use the term expositional preaching, but really what we mean is text driven preaching.
Is
that the text presents the subject matter, the text outlines the point of the message, the text determines even the subpoints of the message. The text may not necessarily illustrate, like you and I are going to put flesh on bones in the preaching experience, but when your people have a palate for text-driven preaching, and someone comes in and they're not a text-driven preacher, they may read a scripture, present an idea, and then have an architecture for the sermon that is not derived from
the text.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's makes sense, it's biblical, it's encouraging, but it's not driven from the point of the text. People that have been trained to hear this repeatedly week after week after week are going to say, "What the heck just happened?"
Yeah.
How do I know that?
Yeah.
Because people will text me and say, "What the heck just happened?" You know, and that's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
But and then on the other hand, Matt, on the other hand, and this is what we've got to remember, is that we have people in our flocks and our churches that will resonate more with a visiting preacher who might tell a lot of stories.
Yeah.
A more narrative driven personal approach, that if we're not careful, you and I can walk away thinking, well, how was that more meaningful to you than you know what the text is saying? And you know, just a word of caution to young preachers out there that might be listening to us. Listen, don't take this personally. Variety is a good thing. We want to put different people to preach to you, to show you what preaching is and stuff. And sometimes, as Phillips Brooks made a case for, you know, preaching is truth through personality. Mm-hmm. And we're not cookie cutters, man. We come to the text differently. We speak differently. We frame it up differently. But hopefully it's all from the text driven rather than my idea imposed upon the text. And even though it might be good stuff, and our people say, well, that's good stuff, if they've been trained by the text, they're going to pick up on
it. All right, so let me ask you a question then. As a pastor, what happens if you have a guy come in that does not do that? You have a guy come and he takes your pulpit for a couple of Sundays or a couple of days in a row or whatever, or even just for one Sunday, and he does not preach the text. Matter of fact, he even may take some things out of context. What is your responsibility then as a pastor?
Yeah, you know, it. A lot of times I think I look at that and I think coming out of this is going to be a net gain. I might be frustrated that it's not the way I would have done it, but I think, if the Lord is going to speak, there may be people that will approach me and say, well, how come that was a different thing? And I would just reiterate, well, I'm committed to text-driven preaching, to exposition of the text, verse by verse, book by book. And that's just kind of the way that I think it's best to feed you and feed us. And I said, nothing that was said was wrong, you know, in that sermon.
Right.
But, you know, it's just a different style of preaching. It's not what I'm committed to. And I think the best style of preaching is this. That's the way I would approach it. And I wouldn't, you know, you got to be careful. I don't want to throw people under the bus. I don't want to, you know, damage the character ministry of anybody that come in here. But people will pick up on it.
Yeah.
And they may ask you. And I think it's okay to say, you know, that's not the style that I'm committed to. Because I think you're going to feed better when the text is feeding you.
Yeah.
Faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of Christ. And that's what I want to give
you. Well, take it a step further. What if the guy does preach something wrong? What if he preaches something that is contrary to what you've been preaching and contrary to what that generally your people understand as the truth? And if you had somebody step out there and say something, how would you as a pastor respond to that? I think that's a fear of some young pastor. What if this guy does say something I don't agree with and I have not been teaching this way? What do I do?
I go back and forth. I had an experience when I was in seminary. At the church that we were serving. I wasn't the pastor, but I was there. And a visiting preacher came in and made the statement that Jesus did not know that Judas was going to betray him, which is clearly
interesting
in opposition to the text.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember sitting out there.
What you're about to do quickly.
Yeah, with my chest burning, thinking about all the people in this room heard error and misled, and I thought, should I jump up and say that's not what the Bible says? And I remember sitting there battling, and I went up to my pastor after it was over, and I said, Pastor, look, we got to correct that, because that was flat wrong.
Right.
He said I know, and we're going to deal with it. And I don't know. I think if it is gross error, I think at this point in my ministry, I will stand and say, now wait a minute, preacher, you may not have meant what you just said, but it will be extremely disruptive, and I think it will be tough.
Yeah.
But I just think if it's error, I've got to do that. If it is and I'm talking about critical orthodox error.
Yes.
If it is interpretational difference.
Good point.
I think it will be something I'll just have to correct or address at a later
great point.
At some time, and not make it necessarily an issue, but later on. And I did this recently. I said, you know, you may have heard, you know, that in terms of salvation, that somebody may have said to you that God casts a vote and Satan casts a vote and you cast the deciding vote. And I said, that is not biblical truth. It's just not.
Right.
And so I don't know who said that, but it has been said. I've heard people repeat that. And so I took an opportunity in a teaching moment to say,
that's good.
That's just not what the Bible says. And I gave some textual stuff that we were dealing with. So I don't know, man. I would hope I'd be courageous enough to confront error if it was there. But I think if it's interpretation that I don't hold to, I let it ride. You know, eschatology, for example.
I was about to say this, stuff like that. You brought that up, and that was on my mind as you were talking. This is where young pastors need to be real clear about what is primary and what's secondary and tertiary.
Yes.
This is where we need to be real careful that we know our doctrine. Mm-hmm. In other words, if somebody were to get up in my pulpit and preach that the rapture is going to happen before the tribulation period, all right, my folks know that I disagree with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't like that.
Yeah.
A lot of my folks don't quite agree with me there. Mm-hmm. That's fine. They know where I stand. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know where a lot of them stand. Mm-hmm. But that's a secondary issue.
Right.
The primary issue is that if a pastor stood up and said, Jesus is coming back and I know exactly when it's going to be and I'm going to tell you, or Jesus is not coming back. If somebody says, okay, now wait a minute.
That's a problem.
That's error with a primary orthodox belief. Now, when it comes to secondary issues, the timing of when he's going to come back and the timing of the rapture and all that kind of stuff, I'm going to stay seated and I'm going to listen to the rest of the sermon and I'm not going to worry about that, but I may take an opportunity later as a pastor to say, let's walk through this again or let's talk about this. I'm not going to worry. Those are the things that I'm not going to worry too much about if it's a secondary issue. If it's a primary issue, that's when we need to be real careful that we understand the difference, because I wouldn't want some young pastor to jump up in a sermon and go, wait a minute, that's wrong.
Right.
Then some pastor eat his lunch because he knows his doctrine better than the young guy
does.
Right. So we need to be real clear what is primary, what's
secondary. I think there's another way to consider this as well, that if, let's say if somebody misspoke in a sermon and didn't didn't mean to say what they meant to say. And after it's over, we go to them and say, hey, did you mean to say this, that, or the other? And they say, well, goodness, no, I didn't mean to say that. I said, well, you did. And let's say that they have multiple times with you. It would be good for that preacher to stand back and say, listen, I said something this morning
right.
or in my last sermon.
Let me just clarify. Yep.
And let me clarify. I didn't. I think I misspoke on that or maybe, you know, that's and a give one. A chance to do that. And that's okay. I've actually done that in my own pulpit because I said something one time. I can't remember what it was, but it was I had misapplied a text somewhere else, and a sweet sister in the Lord came to me and she said, did you mean to say this out of the other? And I said to her, did I say that? And she said, you did. And I went back and watched it and listened to it online, and I said, dadgum, I sure did.
Hmm.
And I came back at a later time and I said, listen, last time I said this, I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that. What I was trying to say was this. And you know, that was a healthy thing.
Yeah.
Because we get it wrong sometimes,
yeah,
too.
That can
and,
be helpful.
And, you know.
Well, that's part of the responsibility of a pastor, right?
Yeah,
be
that's
able
right.
To be able to say that, be able to correct
yep.
it.
Yep.
All right, let me ask you another question. So when a guy comes in to pastor or an evangelist comes in to preach for you, let's talk about this. We alluded to this a minute ago. What about the invitation time? All right,
yeah.
We get to the end of the sermon. And he's done preaching his message, good or bad, whatever, you know, whatever it was. So he's going to get to the invitation time. How do you handle that? First of all, when you're the guest preacher, you're going to preach somewhere else.
Yeah.
Do you plan for that? And how do you have a conversation with a pastor? Is that a good thing to do? Is that a sort of a inconsequential thing? We just tie that on at the end of the sermon, so we just deal with the invitation, or does everybody do it the same? Is that our assumption? So how do you deal with that as a guest preacher?
I think it's the most responsible thing you can do is to sit down with a visiting preacher, as the visiting preacher, and say, how would you like to handle the invitation?
Yeah.
Because they may say to you, well, as you're preaching, you go ahead and get into it, and then at some point if you want to hand it off to me, that's fine. Or they may say, yeah, I'll be happy to handle that if you'll just, when you finish preaching, pray, and I'll take it from there.
Mm.
But I think you need to leave that up to the resident shepherd.
That's a good idea.
And I say that because that's how I prefer it for me.
Yeah.
If someone was coming to me, they asked me, because here's my thought process on that, and you might want to add to it or change something. But I think, okay, someone who's coming outside of my community, from outside of my community, mm-hmm. who doesn't know the history and, let's just say, the near and distant history of my people, where my people are spiritually, what they're struggling with, etc., to come in and to, for example, it's not my practice to lead people in a blanket prayer
mm-hmm.
and then autocratically say, if you pray this prayer, then you're saved.
Right, right.
I think theologically, that's irresponsible. I think there's more going on. Do I believe in conversion? 100%. Do I believe in a gospel call for people to trust Christ? 100%. But there's more diligence, I think, when you're plowing a field with people that some people that are going to drop in for a one-off sermon or whatever, they don't have those concerns that you have.
Mm.
And I'm going to tell you, I got people sitting down in my pews, Matt, that are struggling with doubts, lacking assurance, questioning salvation. And if someone comes in and says, if you're even doubting, would you pray this prayer with me? And then if you do, well, then you're saved. I just think that's, you parachute in and do that, man. You complicate and compound pastoral care, soul
that's
care
right.
issues for the shepherd that's going to deal with that person in the days and weeks to come.
That's good. I like that. I agree with you there. I don't particularly care too much for the blanket prayer thing. Mm-hmm. And I know that's been a thing that has gone on for ages and ages now where, you know, if you're lost, pray this prayer with me. And then when you're
right.
done with that, raise your hand. Let me know that you did that. And
right.
so
right.
that, for a lot of us, that equates salvation, that obviously you got saved if you raised your hand or if you prayed the prayer, that kind of thing. And I have a real struggle with that. I don't know that that's clearly helping somebody to understand what the gospel is and what somebody's response to that should be. I'm not sure, and I think that's sort of unhealthy to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I've been around people that have done that. I've been in services where people have done that. And do I believe that some of those people raised their hand actually got saved? Sure, I do. I do. But like you said, and I really love the way you said it, as a pastor who is plowing the field with his people week in and week out, and he's walking the walk with people who are in his office,
yep.
he's with these families, he understands their struggles, he knows how these parents are praying for this child, And they're oh, they, you know, he may or may not be saved. I don't know. What do I do, Pastor? And how do I respond as a parent? And then all of a sudden, dude comes in and then just sort of solves the problem for them all of a sudden. It takes away some of the punch from the pastor to be able to say, man, I'm working with them to make sure they understand this rightly. I don't want them to just sort of feel like now, oh, yeah, problem's already solved. Now he raised his hand, so we're good to go.
Well, because we're dealing with two things. You and I share this view that I'm trying to point people to Christ, to have faith in Christ, the finished work of Christ, the person of Christ, rather than faith in faith.
Yep.
That's right. And so many times people are having faith in faith because they believe, I prayed the prayer. I trusted. I. And I'm going to tell you something. I is a very shaky foundation.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you can point someone to not I, but Christ, and I'm trusting in him, I'm trusting in that, that's, I think, the greater thing. Now, let's also say this. You and I both, just practically speaking, are committed to giving an altar call. We give an invitation in our churches for people to respond to the message, respond to the gospel. I invite people to come to Christ, trust Christ every single time I preach, every single time. And I think we need to wrestle with this as ministers of the gospel, is that when the Spirit is working, God's going to move in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think in 4 years ministry here, I've seen 60-something people saved, Matt. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Maybe four or five people in a church service have trusted Christ. Mm. Maybe. So where are they getting saved?
Right.
Are they getting saved in the office? Are they getting saved in a truck outside the church, you know, in somebody's home?
That's right.
And so, you know, and we, you know, tongue in cheek a little bit, how were people ever saved without an altar call? This is a relatively new phenomenon in evangelical life.
A lot of people don't understand
that. That's right. So for the greater part of 1800 years, how would anybody ever get saved without an altar call? But it happens, and this is a controversial thing in Southern Baptist life, evangelical life, that, oh, you don't give an altar call? Well, I do.
Yeah.
And I plead with people to trust Christ, but I think that's qualitatively different in calling someone to trust Jesus Christ and to put their faith in him, and then saying, on the other hand, pray these words, do this,
that's different.
And you are saved.
Exactly. And that's what Paul says. And Paul says, I plead with you for the sake of Christ and on his behalf that you be reconciled to God. He's pleading with them. And I think that's what we do. We plead with people to listen. We plead with people to respond to the conviction of the Holy Spirit. That's what we're doing in invitation time. But we don't want to do that irresponsibly.
Right.
I don't know that when it comes to that kind of time as an invitation time and with a guest preacher, I want to be the responsible guest preacher that says, Pastor, you're here with them all the time.
Right.
What do you want to do? How do you want to handle it? Do you want me to give them the invitation? I'll be glad to. But if you'd rather do that, then I'll finish. I'll pray and I'll sit down. I'll let you handle that part because that's with your people and that's a little bit more personal. So I want to do that as a guest preacher. Now, as a pastor having a guest preacher come in, how do you deal with that? Do you have a conversation with the guy? Do you try to sit down with him whether he wants that information or not? Do you risk offending him?
I think so. I think just experience has taught me it's worth having the conversation. I think it's worth saying, hey, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to hear to preach. Typically in the invitation time, you know, I'll come up front, and if when you finish your sermon preaching, if you'll hand that over to me, I'll be happy to take that. And you can say it tactfully. You don't got to be, you know, a jerk about it or whatever. And most men, if they're worth their weight in ministry salt, so to speak, they will understand you and they will defer to you as the pastor shepherd. So, you know, unless a guy is just eating up with himself and, you know, I don't know, it's just hard to say. Of course, you and I are not trying to invite people into our context that are going to have that disposition anyway.
That's true. That's true.
But usually it's worth, if that person doesn't ask you, hey, how do you want to handle the invitation, then I think a lot of times as we do before service, we'll pray together and say, hey, I'll be happy to handle the invitation if you'll just, when that time comes, hand it to
me. That's a good idea. And I want to do a better job at that as a pastor. There have been many times I have not done well where I should have preempted that whole thing.
Yeah.
Rather than creating a problem for myself later, I should have preempted it and said, hey, glad you're here. Let's talk about the invitation, if you don't mind. If you would finish your sermon when you get done, I'm going to take the invitation because we've got something, you know, planned. You know, we've got musicians who will come up here, and so just to sort of say we've this is sort of how we do this, and I'll handle the invitation unless I feel differently about it. You know,
that's
for
right.
that sermon.
And there's always going to be times when neither one of those is going to happen. You're going to come in, pastor busy, called out this, that, and the
right.
other, and all of a sudden you're in the service, and neither one of you have had a chance
That's
to
true.
Talk about it. Here would be my recommendation for that. You're preaching. You move into a time of invitation and say, we're going to enter into a time of invitation. Your dear pastor is going to be standing down front here. If the Lord has moved in your heart, spoken to you in a specific way, I want you to come down and talk to him during this time. Let's all stand as we sing. Mm-hmm. And then get out of there, man, and let the pastor. I'm telling you, you will, if you defer to that pastor 10 times out of 10, you have done the right thing.
Absolutely.
And let him carry the water from there.
That's a good point. I agree with that. I think that's good for young pastors to hear. It's good for me to hear. Mm-hmm. It's good for young pastors to hear. How do I handle this? Because this is right where the rubber meets the road. I'm
it
a
is.
Pastor, man. Dude's yep. coming in to preach, and I need to be ready. I need to have a conversation. I need to somehow make myself available to him to say, okay, here's what we normally do. I need to make sure that I'm caring for the souls of my people in some way, even in the invitation time.
Yeah.
Because that's not inconsequential. That's a serious part of the message. When we get to that point of the invitation, I want to be confident as a pastor that I'm moving the right direction and
right.
that I'm going to help that preacher move the right direction so that he's confident too. That's just something that I think is helpful as pastors to do.
And, you know, we're not just talking to pastors. We know that there are lay people listening to us as well, interested. And I would encourage them, as we've talked through this issue, that in your church context, if you have a visiting preacher and they say something and it stirs you up or it confuses you, whatever, take advantage of going to your pastor and say, hey,
Absolutely.
I may have misheard this, or what was he meaning when he said this? Because I guarantee you, your pastor wants to have that conversation with you. It would be healthy for you to say, look, I was listening, you know, and this is what I heard, and how does that mesh up with kind of this, that, or the other? And that actually advances the ball down the field in a net gain. That I think even if you're sitting there thinking, man, I wish you wouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
But you got people that coming to you, you know, genuinely saying, hey, I heard this. What do I make of this? If you're a layperson, take advantage of that too. And I would say even as your pastor's preaching week to week to week, and you hear some things as your pastor's preaching that, you know, you got a question mark over something, come to him and say, look.
That's exactly right.
That is a good, healthy practice.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. Yep. We expect those kind of questions. We really do. Yep. I know when I'm preaching, I hope that I'm resonating enough with people that they're going, that they're thinking through it enough, that they're engaging mentally, spiritually with what I'm saying. Oh, I liked it. I got a question about this. He didn't address this. Come to me and let me give me an opportunity to do that. I'd love to do that, you know. So
right. I had an experience a couple Wednesday nights ago. You're talking about the rapture earlier, and I was in Revelation 3, the Church of Philadelphia, and there's a text in there that talks about that kind of indicates that you'll be protected from, you know, that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people who hold to a pre-tribulation rapture appeal to that verse. Well, I was making a case that verse is not talking about a pre-trib rapture. And I said, look, you can make that case elsewhere. I'm not convinced of it, and therefore I'm not going to teach from a position of a church being raptured out. And I kind of gave a dispensational analysis and all sorts of stuff. And after the service was over, I went to a retired minister who was there, and man, I respect, you know, I said, well, brother, what'd you think about that? And he said, nobody knows nothing. And I said, and I started laughing, and I said, well, what, you know, did I get it right? And he said, everybody has a right to be wrong. And that's all he said. Now, I don't know
hilarious.
How to take that. I don't know if he was saying I was wrong everybody else was wrong. But it was such a beautiful response that, you know, he's saying, look, sometimes you're going to disagree with stuff, or you're going to, you know, hold views and stuff, and that's okay. And he, I think, is an older minister to me. He was saying, look, we're trying to handle the text, and we're not all going to get it all right.
That's right.
And even if you get it right and I get it wrong, I'm still in a process of learning.
Yeah.
And we're all in this together. So that was really helpful.
Well, it's a good point not to be a jerk. You know, if somebody does come into your pulpit and says something, don't be an idiot.
Yeah,
you know, don't respond in the wrong way. He may have gotten it wrong. He may not realize he said it, but even if he does realize he said it, we just may need to say you got that wrong, and no big deal. I mean, we can process that and move through it, and no need to be a jerk about it.
Yeah, Yeah, so, that's good, man. That's
well, let me
good.
Close the podcast. Man, I hope this has been helpful.
Me
been,
too.
It's been helpful me for me just to process it and go through it. But and there's a lot more to be said about all that. But we're gonna end with a segment that's brand new, all right? Okay. I rolled this out and tried this with my music minister, Marty Hurt, when we did a podcast several months ago on the subject of worship. Mm-hmm. And you weren't able to be there. You were out of town. And so I did the podcast with him. And so I rolled out a new subject just so I could try it out on him. and okay. So now this segment is called Five Questions. Okay. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you five questions. They can be sort of random and questions that I've actually written down, but I have not let you see them.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want you to answer them and answer them honestly. Okay. These are just be mainly personal questions. Okay.
Okay.
I don't think anything's too difficult or too deep that you can't handle. All right. Number one, what is your guilty pleasure song? If you have one, a guilty pleasure song.
What do you mean?
Well, you know,
when I'm running or
something or like just, that, or just when you're running, or something that generally we wouldn't think Micah Carter would listen to, that you would that you would have a song in your mind.
Well, first thing popped in my mind was MC Hammer, Too Legit to Quit.
Too Legit to Quit.
I don't know why it popped in my mind.
Does that help
but,
you run?
But I may have said this in this podcast, but I do like hip hop, you know, rap music, but I can't listen to all of it because some of it's pretty foul, you know, But MC Hammer. Actually, I'd actually been to MC Hammer's house in California.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's pretty neat when I was a summer missionary out there. But yeah, I'd say MC Hammer, man. You know, I just get fired up on Too Legit to Quit, man.
All right. Here's the second question. Name the hobby that you wish you had.
Ooh, the hobby that I wish
you had time for, you had money for, but just a hobby, something you've always wanted to do and do a lot of, but you just never have gotten into it, but maybe because of time or expense or something like that.
Man, that is great. Gosh, man, you threw me on a...
That's a hard one.
That is a tough one. I don't know, man. I think, this is going to sound dumb, maybe this is what I've been thinking about lately, but writing poetry.
Seriously?
Seriously. Because I don't think in those categories, but when I read poetry, I love it. And I've sat down to write poetry, and I'm just like, well, that's dumb. No one's read that. But I've been thinking about it. I even told John, my son John, just yesterday that I was thinking about writing some poetry, and he kind of laughed at me. And so as a hobby, I think, you know, writing in general is something that I would like to do, but writing poetry.
Mm.
And I know poetry is diverse. It's not necessarily rhyme and stuff.
Yeah,
but, that kind of be something I'd like to invest some time in.
All right. Third question. Name your favorite dessert.
Favorite dessert ice cream. Hands
really?
Down.
What kind?
Flavor? Hands down. Okay, pistachio almond from Baskin-Robbins.
Really?
Yeah.
Never had
all-time
that.
Favorite. I don't like chocolate ice cream in general, most anything.
What?
Like, I'll eat a Rocky Road every blue moon. But, anything fruity, man. You got blackberry, any peach, any kind of fruity ice cream, I'm down for that.
Really?
100%.
Okay.
But pistachio almond is my favorite. Baskin-Robbins.
I didn't know that. All right. Question number four. What is your least favorite chore to do around the house? You do chores around the house.
My least favorite is to scrub the tub or the toilet. Like I'll do laundry.
You're speaking my language, man. That's mine too.
I know. I'll do laundry.
Yep.
I'll vacuum. Yep. I like to vacuum actually. I do stuff. That doesn't mean I always do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now Meredith would be the first to say
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, Meredith doesn't even know we have a podcast, so she's
but
not
she
listening.
Exactly. but if you know to have to scrub, and I've done it, and I'll do it. You know, but I don't like to scrub shower and tub and stuff. And I just, you know, under my breath, just, you know, chewing up the world, you know. But I'll do it. It's just my absolute least favorite.
Okay. All right. Yep. That's what I want to know. All right. Fifth question. You're doing well so far.
Thanks,
man. You really are. All right. Fifth question. What is your favorite city to visit?
Ooh, favorite city to visit.
Could be a city you haven't visited before, but, you know, but your favorite place to maybe go back to, something you like this city or you like going back there.
You know, and I'm going there next week, is Los Angeles.
You like L.A.?
I do like L.A. There's just a lot going on. L.A.'s huge, man. It's like 19 million people. Hollywood is there. Mm. A lot of athletics are there. But it's a huge city of influence and gospel need. I like that. I will say this, though. I've been to Chicago a couple times, and I really like Chicago. I've
never been to Chicago.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to
go. That's a neat scene, and man, great downtown. And so, yeah, really, really like Chicago. L.A. is probably my top. I've never been to New York. I've always wanted to go to New York or Boston up in the Northeast, and never had a chance to be there. But L.A. is probably at the top of the list, and then it kind of fans out from there. San Diego is pretty nice, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And it's close.
It's fun. So. Good. You did good.
I need to get some questions for you, man.
I know. No, that's next time. That's okay. Next time. Well, awesome. It's good to be with you, my friend.
You too.
I've enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully, this has been an enjoyment to everybody else listening. Hopefully, it's been a help. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to do in these podcasts. We want to hopefully provide some information and some healthy way to think through some theology and some things that matter for Christian life and the church and all that. So we're grateful that you listen to us on the Gospel Reign podcast. Check us out on social media and all that kind of stuff. Go to our website, gospelreign.com. There you can find all of the episodes that we've done. I think this is, if I'm right, this is like episode number 68 or something like that.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff out there you can share with your friends, but we appreciate you listening, and we'll check you out next time on Gospel Reign.
Thank you for joining us for the Gospel Reign podcast. We hope you've been encouraged today, and we pray the gospel will reign in your life this week. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or check out our website at gospelreign.com.